Blog Talk Radio.
Educating black women about her story from all schools of thought. Radio, dedicated to black women and the study of who and what we are.
Yeah.
and blessings and greetings. You are listening to Black Woman Universe Radio Show, and this is your host, Tara, a.k.a. Seek Wisdom. Just wanted to say hello and thank you to all of my listeners who have been listening. And I've gotten your feedback about the break I took and, the break, we took from the radio show for a while. And I'll get into that toward the end of today's show. But I do want to go ahead and bring my co-host on in a few moments. For today's show, we will be talking about Proverbs, the virtuous woman in Proverbs. And I think it's very important for black women to get into the Bible and some of these other sacred texts and really find out what is really being said about us and how we are looked at, how society looks at us from various points of view and various cultures, various religions and mythologies, so we can have a clear understanding of who and what we are. So y'all know how we do here on Black Woman Universe Radio. Before we get into today's show, I do want to give some information out about Nubia Warfer Polk, our archaeologist that is going to be going back to Sudan in Nubia to, start her dig back up. And if you can, look her up on Facebook. She's on Facebook as Sister Nubia, Sister Nubia, let me correct that, S-I-S-T-A-H, and then Nubia, N-U-V-I-A. And we will be setting up a blog talk radio, a blogathon, or a talkathon, if you will, on the radio where we can raise money to assist her and her efforts in her archaeological project in Nubia and Sudan. So feel free to visit her on her website at ancientnubiancities.com, and you can email her at nubiandigs, and that's digs with a Z, nubiandigs@hotmail.com, and I'm going to go ahead and spell that, N-U-B-I-A-N-D-I-G-Z @hotmail.com. She will be, she's in the process of doing a, actually her DVD has already been finished. It is In Search of the Creatress. It explores the spread of the creatress to several continents and the possibility of how it spread from Africa to Asia to Europe, etc. The iconography associated that implies a central root of belief layered by the change in location, ethnic interpretation, and time. So, again, we will be doing a radio telethon to support the Nubian Archaeological Project headed by Sister Nubia, Nubia Warfer Polk, and the DVDs will be $20. They normally sell for $25. But if you don't want to wait for the radio telethon, you can go ahead and email her at the email address I gave you to purchase the DVD. Again, during the telethon, they will be $20, but they normally sell for $25. And this is to support the archaeological project and to get the information that this sister is bringing. She has a lot of primary research information. And, again, hopefully later in the year or earlier next year, we'll be looking to get women involved that will be able to go over and participate in the primary research doing, at the archaeological site. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and open the line up for the co-host today. Hey, Lynn, how you doing, sis?
I'm great. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. A little excited to, be getting back to the radio shows and sharing information with everyone. And, I want to get into one of our, the discussions that we have quite often about women being able to support themselves financially, emotionally, and just being prepared to take care of their own thing, regardless of whether they are married or in a relationship or they're single, whether they're single moms, whatever the situation is. It's just important that women understand that they need to be, they do not need to be dependent upon anyone else for their livelihood. And in talking about this, we've gotten into various conversations with different women of different religious or different religious backgrounds who always point to, well, this is what the Bible says, or this is what the Quran says, and I'm supposed to be a, you know, a submissive woman, and or, you know, I'm supposed to let my husband lead and do all of this. But when you really get down to it, when we're in the churches or in the mosques or the synagogues or what have you, we're being told based on interpretation of whoever's giving the information. Well, what happens when we actually go read these books on our own and actually get a dictionary and pull up some of what these words mean? You become very much aware of what these things really mean versus what everyone else is trying to tell you they mean. So let's go ahead and get into Proverbs, you know, and what exactly, before we get into our Bible study for the day, if you will, what was your interpretation of what you thought a Proverbs woman was based on what you were taught in church when you were younger, or based on what your parents said? What did you think about Proverbs? Because this is this particular area of the Bible is of great importance to you because you studied it a lot. So just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually raised in church, so I have heard this passage read many times, and all of the churches that I was raised in, the pastor or reverend was a man. So every time that I have heard this passage read or taught, it's always been from the standpoint that, you know, be a Proverbs 31 woman. You know, the virtuous woman is a Proverbs 31 woman. You know, she's, and it's always been this meek, mild, pious, chaste depiction of what a woman should be in her walk with God and so on. And that's the only version of this passage that I have ever heard. But going back over it with the knowledge that I have now, going back over it and reading it for myself, it has taken on a whole nother meaning, and that's what we'll discuss today.
Very interesting, very interesting. This show will be today just to get into it. Well, let's go ahead and get into what we're doing, Proverbs 31, correct?
31, yes, ma'am.
And that is going to be, you said 10 through 30, okay, 31, verse 10 through 31. Now, this is interesting because y'all know how we normally do on the radio show here. We normally study from a vast array of texts, and when we go to the Bible, it's normally to refer to a specific text in the Bible in reference to something else we're referring to. So we're going to kind of back it up and do it in reverse today. We're going to have a conversation and have a talk based on some of the information. A lot of women, period, but specifically a lot of black women, I'll just say women. Women are told that this is what they're supposed to be about. So we're going to read it, and then we're going to get into some of what these definitions mean and what these things really mean and how it relates to the woman of today. And, you know, plain and simple, we're gonna break this information down as to how it relates to us today and what this really means in terms of what these words mean, because that's the most important part. What do these words mean? So let's go ahead. Do you want to go ahead and go ahead and start us off?
Sure. And I think in the main resource being the Bible is apropos because the majority of black women are being raised in Christianity, or if not raised in it, they're being taught it. And
right.
This is the only resource that a lot of black women know. And this
right.
This image is being projected on them strictly based on what's written here, or you know, whatever that particular pastor's impression of what these words mean. So to get this information directly from this passage is important. This is the only reference that a lot of black women are familiar with.
The other thing, too, the reason why I think this information is important before you start is it's amazing to me, doing what I do and then, you know, speaking with women who come from, you know, who are Christian or who are, you know, Muslim or what have you. When I speak with them and I can communicate with them at their level of understanding instead of just coming out talking about goddess or talking about, you know, our heritage as black people and our culture, if I just step to them from where they are and where they understand, that conversation flows a little easier and they're not as on edge when you speak with them and they can understand it better. They can find themselves in the Bible where a religion has pretty much told them that you're supposed to follow behind a man or just be subservient or submissive to a man. You know, it allows them to really find themselves in that text, and once they have that understanding, then I can refer them to, you know, Jeremiah and tell them about the Queen of Heaven and tell them that, you know, God is a woman. I can then get them there because I can really show them where it is, because not all of the information has been taken out of the Bible. Some of this information is still there. You just have to know where it is, and you have to be able to go and study it on your own without having someone else give you their interpretation of it. So that's what we're going to do today. This is pretty much going to go through a very important section in the Bible and show you how to break these words down and be able to do your research on your own on any level, not just applicable to the Bible or to the Quran or anything, but how to do your research on your own. So let's go ahead and get started.
Absolutely, and I think this passage is a perfect example of that. God is in the Bible, and I think this passage, this class could have very well been called God is 101. I believe that Proverbs 31 is step-by-step basic instruction into Godhood. It just hasn't been taught that way.
Right.
At the very beginning of the passage in Proverbs 31, it starts off by telling you who is the person doing the speaking. That I don't think is looked at very often either, but I think it is important to note that the information in Proverbs 31 is coming from a woman. It is the king's mother who is giving him lessons, who is giving him this information. So this is a woman talking to her son.
Who is a king?
Who is a king?
Right.
And she's basically telling him that when you are looking for
what's
a woman, these are the things. Yes, these are the things that you should look for. This is what's important. And that's in verse 1. And if you jump down to verse 10, that's when it gets into the example of a virtuous woman. And in order to understand and everything else that we're looking at and how this is an example of a virtuous woman, I think it's good to go to the dictionary and first find out what virtuous and virtue really are.
Mm-hmm.
What does that really mean? Because, again, we've been taught that a virtuous woman, you get the image of this chaste woman who, you know, is touched by no man and she's, you know, virginal and pure and quiet and, you know, that's the image that you get when you hear about virtue and being virtuous.
I can read the definition if you like.
Oh, please.
For virtue. So the definition for virtuous, we'll start there since that's what the passage in 31:10 has. Virtue says having or exhibiting virtue or being morally excellent or righteous. Now, let's go ahead and look up virtue since it says having or exhibiting virtue. Virtue has several meanings, but pretty much it's of particular moral excellence, but more importantly, a beneficial quality or power of a thing. So from the jump, they're also referring to celestial hierarchy. They refer to angels or being angelic. But the main thing here is a beneficial quality or power of a thing. So right from the jump in 31:10, who can find a powerful and beneficial quality woman? So this isn't a woman who is just submissive. This is not a woman who is just, you know, idly standing by waiting for a man to make the decision for her. She stands in her own power. She is a powerful being.
And beneficial.
Anything else you want to add to that definition before you go on?
And beneficial. I think beneficial is important also. This means that her being around is a help. Is the help. She's not a drain.
Right.
Yeah, I think that, those are the important definitions when it comes to virtue. And as a matter of fact, chaste is the last meaning listed in all the in the long
right.
list of definitions for virtue. Chaste is the very last. Okay. So now that
yes,
we have an understanding.
Very, very.
Yeah, with the understanding of what virtue is, then it gets into the characteristics. And starting with verse 10, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. And,
well, what does noble mean?
Hmm.
I'm going to tell you what noble means, because, I mean, all of these words, we really have to have a clear understanding of what noble means. So read that passage one more time.
A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. And this is the old school King James Version.
Okay, so this woman is virtuous first. So she's independent, she's powerful in her own right, and now we find that she's noble. And noble
mm-hmm.
means possessing outstanding qualities. She's illustrious, she's famous, she's notable, she's of high birth or exalted rank. So we're not just talking about we're not just talking about any and everybody. They're speaking specifically about a woman that stands out, has her own right, possesses power, and she has outstanding qualities. She's notable. She's of high birth and exalted rank.
Mm-hmm.
And the other word they use is illustrious when they describe noble, shining brightly with light, outstanding because of her dignity and achievement and action.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go ahead and continue.
And, all right, she's far more than rubies. The 11th verse says, her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value.
Mm. You mean to tell me that her husband is confident in the decisions she makes and everything that she does?
In everything that she does and lacks nothing of value.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you mean to tell me that the husband doesn't question her?
No, he's confident. Mm-mm.
Oh, he's confident in her decision-making. So she's powerful, she's noble, she's of exalted rank and of high birth, and he's confident in the decision she makes. That sounds like a woman with some authority to me.
Indeed. And then the he lacks nothing of value is a strong statement also, because that confirms why he's confident. He's lacking nothing of value, meaning that her past decisions have proven to be good because he has everything that he needs. He has, meaning that she is taking care of things, not that she's sitting back waiting on him.
Right. Now, I want to stop here just to be inclusive of this. The book that we're reading out of in the Bible, we know a lot of this, pretty much all of this information that's in the Bible and in other sacred texts come from out of, you know, African ancient traditions and teachings.
Mm-hmm.
However, this proverb specifically is a very important, is very important in terms of, you know, because a lot of the information that's in Proverbs come out of different papyruses or different writings from Kemet and some of the information out of Nubia as well. So it's just important to understand where this information comes from and who they're speaking about. So they already knew what a virtuous woman was coming from that era.
All right, and going to verse 12, she brings him good and not harm all the days of her life.
She brings him good.
She brings him good.
Wow.
Meaning that to me, that meant that she has no malice in her heart for her husband or for this man that she has chosen to be with. Because she has chosen well. She is confident in her own decision.
That's right.
She has no reason to feel any evil or malice towards him because she has chosen her mate well. She has taken her time and called forth what she wanted in a mate and was able to recognize him when he came along. So, therefore, she's able to have nothing but love and good feelings for him. She has no malice towards him at all because she called him.
She picked him out.
Exactly.
She wasn't chosen. She chose him.
She made the choice, exactly.
That's right. That's right. All right. Let's continue.
All right, verse 13. She selects wool and flax and works eager with her hands.
This sounds like a woman that was working. She was running a business. She was a businesswoman. It seems as though they're describing a woman of authority, a woman of exalted birth, a woman of power. She selected her mate, and her mate was confident in the decision she makes. And now she's starting to work her business. She selected wool, flax, and worked willingly with her hands. So she was a hands-on woman.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This doesn't sound like what I was told about a Proverbs woman. So initially before doing, you know, my own research and knowing these things, this isn't what I was told just by hearing it from, you know, the preachers and the pastors in the pulpit. That's not what I've heard.
No, not at all. The fact of being busy selecting products and for your own business, no, I've never heard that. And so after selecting her wool and flax and working with her hands, verse 14 says she is like the merchant ship bringing her food from afar.
So she's in control of what is eaten in her household as well.
Right, her home is fully stocked.
Oh, wow.
The 15th chapter verse, she gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls.
Now, wait. She get up while it's dark outside. I'm going to hold off on my comment on that one. I'm going to let that one sink in. I'm going to let the getting up while it's dark sink in, because we already know what we've learned about this Proverbs woman so far. So we're going to let the getting up while it's dark sink in, because I know personally I get up while it's dark, and I know what I do when I get up while it's dark. I want to see what she does when she get up while it's dark. I want to see what they're talking about.
And after handling her business in the dark, she's preparing herself and her household for the day. And mentioned after preparing herself and her household, she's also setting aside food. In addition to feeding herself and her household, this woman has food for her servants. So first of all, she has servants.
Exactly. She's got servants. She has servants.
And she has enough, so not only is she able to pay her servants, but she's able to feed them as well.
Wow. You know, this is sounding very goddess. This is sounding very queenly. This is sounding very virtuous.
And noble.
This is sounding very noble, very illustrious, very exalted, very much a woman who knows what she wants and sets a goal and goes and get it. That's what I hear. This is a very empowered woman. She's not waiting around for other people to do what she needs to get done. She is setting about getting it done and making sure that it's done and putting the work in so that she has, you know, the things that she requires and desires. That's what I'm hearing here. Again, this is not what is taught in your average church, not what is taught, you know, in the circles of Bible study. Wow. Read it for yourself, ladies. All right, so I particularly like verse 18.
No, but don't be this
that her merchandise is good. Well, hold on, no, is it 18? No, it won't 18. It's another one. I jumped ahead of myself. Anyway, continue on. I'll let you know when we get to it.
Okay. Well, 16 is important also. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard.
She owns land.
And she's investing. She's taking her profits from one business and creating another.
You mean she's not going just, I mean, she clearly, we're going to see how good she's dressed. But she's making conscious business decisions to expand her wealth and investing her money versus just, you know, she's making really good business decisions. Wow.
She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her task. 18, she sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out by night. So she's rising while it's dark, and after dark, she's still up working.
Right. So she's staying busy about her business. She's making sure that her investments are tangible and that they're working for her, because it says she perceives that her merchandise is good. She's making sure that her business is working properly.
In her hand, she holds the staff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. And that just goes back and shows that she's a working woman. The staff and the spindle are used in sewing and making items, which she would be doing with the flax and wool that she purchased.
Now, I do want to throw this in. This staff has a couple of different meanings.
Mm-hmm.
This staff specifically refers to woman's work or woman's domain, and it also refers to the female branch or the side of a family. So it has a couple of different meanings. It also has to do, as we previously read, has to do with holding a staff for holding flax, tow, or wool and spinning, but it also means specifically not saying that just creating fine clothing and linen is just a woman's work, but it also is a word that denotes the female side of the family or the matriarch of the family. So I just wanted to include that.
The same. Which, going back and reading it with those different meanings in there, can make that a completely different verse.
Exactly. Exactly.
But in verse 20, she opens her arms to the poor and extends her hand to the needy. And this characteristic goes back to, you know, because she is a businesswoman and makes good business decisions, because she's taking care of her household and made sure that she has money, she is able to help the poor and to hold out her hands to the needy.
Right, because if you're not a person who's about your business, or you're not a woman who's about your business, and you are not ensuring your success, you don't have anything to assist anyone else with. So she's being about her business, and excuse my, you know, vernacular, but she's on her grind, if you will. She's handling her business, and she's also giving back to her community because she's able to do so because of the fruits of her labor. Because her business is going well, she can assist others.
Mm-hmm. 20, verse 21, when it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet.
Now, before we get into that, go ahead and read the next one.
She makes a covering for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple.
So we just read scarlet and purple. And if you know anything about, doing different time frames or royalty, most of the time royalty was denoted by scarlet and purple. So here you're talking about somebody who's of royalty, and she's still working to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
This was a woman who had fine clothing because she owned her own businesses. She owned land. She helped the needy. She was a woman of power. She was an exalted woman. She was virtuous. So this is what we're finding out that a virtuous woman is.
And when her family, in times of peril, snowstorm and times where other people would be worried, she's okay. She's thought ahead. She's prepared for her and her household.
That's right. Now, 23,
mm-hmm.
I thought was interesting.
Me too.
Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. So the man that she has selected to become her husband isn't just your everyday fella. She selected a man who's known, a man of stature. And we already know she chose him. He didn't choose her.
Then you could also
go ahead, sis.
You can also look at that, going the other way also. While he may be a man of character, being that she is noble in all of these things, by selecting him, putting the spotlight on him, can also have raised him to his position as well.
Indeed.
All right. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchant with sashes. She outsources her goods.
I'm sorry, I didn't. What did you just say?
Her business is such that she can outsource. She sells her items to merchants and they sell things for her.
She has a business and she has workers. She has people out. Oh, okay. She's running a corporation.
Mm-hmm. She's clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come.
Mm-hmm.
I think that right there speaks for itself.
Oh, yeah, it does. There's no explanation needed for that one.
She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness.
So she's not sitting around twiddling her thumbs. She's actually making plans. She's secure about her future. She can laugh at tomorrow because she's not worried. She's playing things out.
Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her.
Again, when that mom sets that good example for those children, the children in most cases are less likely to go and make children are always going to make mistakes, so I'm not going to say that. What I am going to say is when that mother sets that tone and sets a good example, it's certain things that child knows and is secure in. They're more confident. They have a better self-esteem about themselves. So that's what I got, one of the things I got in just reading that brief passage right there, that verse.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, her husband's proud of her because he praises her.
Yes, and to go through all the trials and tribulations that you do with children, for them to become adults and can look back and say blessed things about their parents, that is an accomplishment because so many people have so many complaints about their childhood and the way things went.
Exactly.
That goes back and speaks to her nobility and the character that she has, that as adults her children can go back and then say good things about her.
Exactly. Now, this next verse here I thought was very, very, very telling.
Mm-hmm. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive.
Now,
and
which version of the Bible are you reading?
This is the King James. I also have the NIV here.
Now, I'm reading from the King James, too, and what I've noticed, and listen, ladies, what I've noticed is both of us are reading from the same version of the Bible, but some of the words are not the same. Some of the arrangements are not, and we're reading from the same version of the Bible.
Right.
So I'm going to read you what this one just says. It says, many daughters have done virtually, but thou excellest them all.
Okay.
Either way, she is a woman who is excelling and doing very well for herself. She is a very powerful woman. She is independent in her own right. She does have her husband, and she has children, but she's still doing her own thing, buying land, being the owner of land, running a business, having people that work for her. She has servants. They are all well fed. Her house is taken care of. She's not worried about tomorrow, and should a storm come, she's prepared. This is the virtuous woman in Proverbs.
Yes, and to me, this means that of all the women who are doing it, she even excels above them.
Right.
And then the next verse is classic. Charm is deceitful and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord will be praised.
Now, I can't necessarily say I agree with the very last part.
I agree with it, but then I looked at being who I am, I looked at it a different way. Because, you know, a woman who fears the Lord or a woman who fears God, but then the question is, who is God? And to me, fear.
Yeah, that's why I said the common explanation, the common interpretation of that is that God is this male God that's jealous. Well, we already know if we go ahead to Jeremiah, which we very well might. In Jeremiah, there's a different God that's being spoken about, and who's to say that the woman. And all throughout Proverbs, you have this woman of wisdom who's spoken about, who says that she was there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I try to explain to a lot of people is that there is more than one God in this Bible.
Right.
Certain points, God is very vengeful and wants to go off warring and killing people. But then at other times, there's this God of love and peace. And they are not two different faces of the same God. These are different deities. Just like there are two different creation stories in Genesis, actually almost three. And it seems as if they don't know about each other up until a certain point. But we can talk about that another day.
Right. So when I read this, I looked at it as a woman who recognizes and respects the goddess within herself is to be praised. That's the way that I looked at that statement.
Okay, there was a question here. It says, I missed the verse where she chose him.
Well, that goes back
it's not,
to...
It's not, I don't... Go ahead.
That goes back to just general, again, recognize the goddess within yourself. When you are standing when you are goddess and you are standing in your power as this strong, noble woman of character, you don't just take anything that comes along and says that they want you. You are in a position to make the choices of what you want, and that's just day-to-day life. You know, when you are in a position where you know who you are, you don't accept any situation that just walks up and presents itself. You choose what is good for you. That is when you are this noble woman. And when you do that, when you make that choice and you've made a good decision, when you see this man on a daily basis, you don't have to look at him with disrespect and disdain because you've chosen what you wanted.
Right.
That would be how it would have to be. In the because I believe it was the verse where she said she does her woman, she does her husband good in order to
right,
do
that.
Right,
that's 11 and 12. 11 and 12 speaks about the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not even all. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. But it also goes on to talk about how he is known well within the gates. This is clearly talking about a woman who's buying land and making decisions. So if she's buying land and making decisions and running her own business, she's going to make a decision about who it is that she selects to be her mate, who it is that she does business with in all aspects, including a marriage. And while I'm on that, I want to include this because I think women should know this and have a clear understanding of this. Marriage where, I'm going to ask you this, Lynn. Where in these passages we just went over where his, so the person that's speaking here to this king in this section of Proverbs, it's a mother speaking to her son, who is a king, about what a virtuous woman is. Where in the passages that we read did he talk about love?
It's not in there.
Love is not in here. It's talking about this woman who is about her business, who gets up early, who knows what she wants. She's buying land. She has servants that are clothed and fed, and that she has people. She's running a corporation. And she's a good character. She's an exalted woman. It's talking about a woman who's about her business. There's nothing in here about love, and this is a king. My point here is that women need to understand that marriage, it was never about, oh, I love him, or I got googly eyes for him, and I'm going to go marry him. Marriage was a business arrangement. There may be some that want to disagree with that, but the fact of the matter is marriage was always a business arrangement. Now, of course, you would want to love the person you're going into that type of business with. But that wasn't the main identifying factor of a marriage, because you can have a spiritual connection with a person and don't have what's considered a legal marriage or a certificate of marriage. That certificate is identifying a business arrangement. Just like when you go to get divorced, in order to break that up, you have to invite somebody else in and see if y'all have good basis for a divorce. Just like when you go to dissolve a company, it has to be a certain amount of basis to dissolve that company. Like I said, I'm not going to get, you know, too deep into it, but marriage is a business arrangement, and women need to stop going into marriages just solely based on love, because if you're not selecting a proper mate and it's just because you love him, but this mate, if you and this mate are not, and I'll use a biblical term for this, even though it's not just Bible-related, if you and your mate are not equally yoked, one of you are going to be doing the bulk of the work. And so, again, that's not a good business arrangement. Anyway, I do think in knowing what we just discussed about Proverbs, about, you know, who this virtuous woman is and what virtuous and virtue means and what noble means, I think that does give a more clear definition or more clear understanding as to what what a verse was for me.
Don't forget the 31st verse, because I think that is the last verse. That one is important too, or at least it was to me. The very last verse says to give her the reward that she has earned and let her work bring her praise at the city gate. And to me, that verse was important, because if we're talking about the woman who is doing all these things that we have said, you know, she's proven her character, she's proven her nobility, her husband trusts her children trust her, the servants depend on her to be fed, she's making money, she's selling products, she's doing all of these things, she's prepared for the future, she's in touch with her goddesshood, she's taking care of everything from, you know, before the sun is up and after the sun is going down, and after she has done all of that, give her the reward that she deserves. Give that woman her props. Indeed. Even sister to sister, when you see a woman who is doing all of these things and you recognize her as that, let's not be jealous, let's not be bitter,
right.
Let's not be angry. Give
right.
this woman her props, because we just read about a fantastic woman, and that
That's
is
right.
the idea that we should all be aspiring to and walking in. And if you see somebody who's doing it, give it up to her. For men,
that's right.
who women, for a woman who is doing these things, don't pull her down. Don't say she's trying to be a man. She is doing the damn thing. Give her the reward that she has earned.
Right. The other thing to be to mention here too is that this is a woman who's doing her thing with her business, being independent, has her family, has her husband. You know, her husband praises her. Her children, you know, say that she's blessed. She also extends her hand out to help her community and people in need. So let's just say you are a sister that isn't doing what she's doing. Instead of being jealous, why not give it up to her and say, you know, you're doing some marvelous things. Can you teach me some of what you know? Can you help me out? I want to be like you. You inspire me. Can you help me? And I find a lot of us as black women, and I think it's a societal thing, regardless of where it started, the being jealous of each other and not, commending each other, saying job well done, and being willing enough to sit there and let us teach each other instead of being like this crab in a barrel, you know, thing, pulling each other down, thinking that it's a competition. We are not and should not be in competition with each other.
Because
we can all be virtuous women.
Then there is no competition. Only you can be you to the best of your ability. There is no competition. I can't be a goddess seek wisdom better than you can be it. So there is no competition between the two of us.
That's right.
You can inspire me to get on my thing. I can be the goddess that I can be, but I can't do what you're doing, and nor can you do what I'm supposed to do.
That's right.
Competition is an illusion. There is no competition.
It is very much. It's very much an illusion, and people are working that illusion. And I mean, honestly, there to me, I don't see a need in being envious or. And I use that word envious lightly, because sometimes when I'm joking with friends or I'm saying something, I'd be like, I envy you, but I don't really mean it in the context of I'm jealous of you and I hate you type of, you know, thing. Honestly, you know, being jealous of another woman when nobody has something that you don't have. We all shine and have our own different flow and glow about ourselves and can do anything that we imagine and more. It's just that we have to be confident in ourselves that we can do these things, that we have to plan and then set out to do our work as this virtuous woman does. That's what makes us that virtuous woman, being able to plan and then go and do what we want to do, what we want for ourselves, not what everyone else wants for us to do. There was nowhere in this passage where somebody else told her she needed to go and do this. This is what a virtuous woman was. And the thing I wanted to speak about was that she pretty much I don't know if we went over this particular verse or if it was in a different section, but this same woman calls out to the day and says what the day is going to be. She speaks her day into existence.
Now, that's what she's doing when she rises while it is yet dark.
And see, that's why I said I like that part. She calls her day into existence saying this is what it's going to be. She's not sitting around waiting for things to happen. She's making her reality so. It would be interesting to see what the, you know, give us a call, 646-716-7675, press 1 if you have a comment or question. But I would love to get some feedback on, you know, what we've discussed thus far. I'm going to go ahead and look into the chat room because there were some comments that were in the chat room. Yeah, romance is a new thing, and now it is treated as religion. It sure is. It is. It definitely is. And another sister says she does choose it because she is the black hole and draws men to her because of her essence. It is the law of attraction. Indeed it is. All right, we do have someone with their hands up on the switchboard, so let me go ahead and open that line up. It is a private number. Who am I speaking with? The caller coming up, 111. All right, let me try that one more time. 111.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
You are speaking with someone who has been greatly, or who is greatly appreciative of the message that you two brought forth today. It's made me smile and say, yeah, I see me, and it also made me smile and say, that's what I have to work on. And it's all good. This is Queen Goddess Okis, and it's good. It's good teaching the young and the old of the way to go and not to be entrapped by what the society has put before us as, you know, what marriage really is. And it is about being a goddess, walking in that goddess vibration and knowing that you are the center of the family. And I love it.
Well, thank you for the feedback and thank you for listening.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for being there.
All right. All right. Like I said, if you have a question or comment, press 1 on your keypad. And if you are listening to us on Facebook, come on over to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/blackwombiverse. And give us a call so we can see what your comment or questions are. We have another caller on the switchboard, but I don't see their hand raised. They didn't press 1, so I'm not going to open their line. But 661, press 1 if you have a comment or question. Now, it's just, go ahead.
I just wanted to reiterate that these guidelines, these characteristics here, I don't think should be something that is done or a path that we get on once we find a man or become married or, you know, I think that these things should be happening right now. You know, these are things that a woman should be for her own sake. These things benefit a woman to have your own business, to be this woman of character before a man even comes into play.
I mean, we should be very empowered to really make our dreams come true for ourselves and not to wait on other people to do these things for us. I mean, this is, we're really talking about things that we owe ourselves. If it's something that, you know, a business you've been looking to start or, you know, a particular goal you want to meet, you know, set out and make plans to do just that. Be virtuous about what it is that you want to accomplish and go do it. Because, I mean, there are resources out there, there's support out there, there's different ways for us to go and do what we want, but we have to be very cognizant of the fact that we have been kind of sort of through religion and other different traditions, we've been told what it is that women ought to be and should be, and what's a good woman versus not a good woman, and you need to be submissive and to find a husband, and, you know, you haven't found a husband because you two, and I have to say this. One of my friends had this guy that was interested in her, right? And the guy knew she was talking to someone else, but it wasn't, you know, serious. She wasn't engaged or whatever. So she went ahead and went out on a date with him. And during the date, the guy asked her, why do you think that you're still single? First of all, I got offended with that question. But she said, I looked at her, I was like, he asked you what? Because to me, I knew what that was. I identified that as him trying to get into her psyche to make her doubt herself. She didn't look at it like that. So I just, you know, I sat back and I was listening. And the guy said, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of men are intimidated by you because it looks like you, you know, you have a good job. You make a good salary. You have your own, you know, thing going on. You know, it seems like a guy wouldn't have anything to, you know, a man wouldn't have anything to offer you. Maybe you're too ambitious. Maybe you should slow down because a lot of men think they don't have anything to offer you. My mouth dropped open. And I was like, what? So because he's insecure, and because other men may be insecure, she needs to slow her goal down and accomplish her goal to wait on him, to wait on a man to be bold enough to step to her? And I was like, you know, to me, I got a little offended by that because, not a little, a lot, because it's like, why do, and sadly, you know, sad to say, but a lot of men feel that way. A lot of men are intimidated by women who have their own stuff, you know, who are independent and everything. My main thing was, okay, what if you're not looking for just a guy who can buy you stuff? That would be fine, but what if you're looking for a mate who you enjoy spending time with? There are other things that a man can contribute other than just money. Yeah, we need to be equally yoked on that platform. Because I'm not going to be with someone who can't, who's going to bring me down. I need to be at a neutral position or better. I need to always be looking to excel better and higher. I'm not going to go with, and I'm just speaking for me, I would not be looking to a male that does not have what I have and is not aspiring to have where I'm going in life. We need to have some commonalities about what it is we want to do in life. I consider myself a person who likes to travel. I'm into business. I'm into spiritual things. And the third, I have a lot of interest. But whoever I'm interested in has to be on an equal playing field with what some of my interests are, how we manage money, you know, things like that. And if I can't find what I'm looking for, I'm fine with being by myself. And we have to be fine with that. Because some women, the thought of being by themselves scares them so much that they settle and they put their dreams on a back burner. And to me, when you do that, you just are not happy. And if your definition of happy is a man or somebody outside of you making you happy, you have to kind of sort of question that. Because if somebody else is in control of your happiness, there might be a problem there. This person that's in addition should be able to make you happier, but not be the thing that your happiness depends on. What if he, you know, happens to lose his wife? Or what if he decides that, you know what, y'all not compatible and he wants to go? If your happiness is dependent upon your mate, then at that point when, for whatever reason, that relationship ends, what are you going to do? So, you know, and this speaks for a male or female. You need to be happy by yourself. And to me, I think that's why a lot of us are in these situations where we are single, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with being single. I'm happily single. But I'm very happy with it because I've been able to obtain some of the goals and do some of the things I want to do by myself, and I'm fine with that. But I also understand how a lot of women are at points in their life where they want, you know, a companionship, And there's nothing wrong with that. But don't settle to get that companionship, because at the end you're really not going to be happy, because you're not really going to be who you really truly are. And this person doesn't know you for who you are, because you're settling and you're accepting less than what you desire and what you require. So I just, that whole situation about this guy trying to get into her head, back to the story, the situation with my friend, the guy trying to get into her head and her psyche, trying to make her think that she was too independent, too driven, too ambitious for a man to step to her, I was completely taken aback by that. And I think she was, too. I was happy to hear that she was, because, again, I don't push my opinions on other people. I speak my piece and then keep it moving. But ladies, watch out for that.
And not only that, but and oftentimes, like you said, him saying that, a lot of times we hear what people say and we are so quick to look at ourselves and judge ourselves rather than hear what they're saying and where they're coming from. What he said to her is telling about his psyche. You know, if she was able to, instead of feel, self-conscious about the decisions that she made, if she was able to listen to what he was saying, then that goes to what tells his psyche on how he's not really concerned about meeting any of her needs psychologically, emotionally, or spiritually. All he's worried about is feeling insignificant that he can't do anything for her financially.
Wow. I mean, it's a lot. To me, it's just a lot more than I've already established that a male would have to be equally yoked. That's on pretty much all levels, because I'm not going to accept something less than what I know I should have. That's not saying we can't be friends, you know, but I'm not going there. But it's just interesting to me that the guy's first thought went immediately to money. Like, that's all that he could offer. That's all you can offer. Yeah, making a nice salary is nice, but if that's all you can offer, I got that on my own, so what next?
Right.
What about
if
our
that's
conversation?
All that he can,
will you make me laugh? Will you? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if that's all that he can offer, y'all don't have a problem in the long run anyway.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing. If a woman is not independent from the standpoint of being able to meet all of her needs by herself, then she may be driven to be with a man just for money. And if that's, like you just said, if it's just the money, you're never going to be satisfied with him, and you're never going to be, that is not going to last for long if you're just with someone just because of money. And you can't be, and this is the other thing that we women get caught up on, and I'm going to just be outright plain, and I'm going to say it, and if anyone, I'm just going to warn you now, excuse my vernacular or the selection of words I'm choosing. But if you just with him because he got some good dick, you missing out on a whole lot of stuff that other things that comprise of a, you know, relationship or what have you.
Yeah, that belongs in a box all by itself.
It's just interesting to me how I feel as though a lot of women fear stepping out on their own, because sometimes we don't have proper examples of where that has been done in our family and things. And I'm going to share a quick story with y'all. Y'all know how I do. I share stories all the time. I went to my nephew. My nephew just graduated from high school. He just turned 18 a couple days after his graduation. And so, you know, we had a graduation party for him and everything. And at his graduation party, I had our whole family wasn't there because our whole family couldn't make it, you know. We lived a little far apart. But out of the people who were there, I had an aunt from each side of the family and a couple of cousins and, you know, our babies from the next generation and all. So we're sitting there, you know, having a conversation, and my sister just got married. My cousin is engaged. And one of my nieces, who is 19, you know, kind of young to be pregnant, but, you know, it is what it is. She's pregnant. She's with child. I just found out she's having a girl. Yay. Anyway, you know, we were talking, and she said, well, you know, Aunt Tara, when are you going to have a baby? I said, And let me explain something. I love children. I really do. They are beautiful gifts, bundles of joy. You know, I absolutely adore children. But I had to kind of sort of question why I wanted to have children when I was younger. And I still want to have children, but, you know, it'll be later. And I'm fine with having children later on in life. But it's certain things that are societal, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. So let me just finish the story. So I was like, no, I don't, children, I was like, yeah, maybe in like 7 or 8 years. And my aunt started looking at me like, oh, 7 or 8 years, well, whoa. That's a little, I was like, and I said, Mary, you can forget it, y'all. Just see that, you know, my sister get married. You see, you know, my cousin's going to get married. I don't really think I'm interested in marriage. And my aunt was just looking at me like, whoa, no kids, no marriage, what's going on? And I was like, well, I have a lot of things I'm interested in. You know, I like traveling. I have other things that I do. And, you know, not all of my family knows everything that I do. But, you know, it's like I have a business to run. I want to be, you know, successful at these things because these are my dreams and my goals. And, you know, I want to accomplish those things for myself. So I want to wait to have children because I want the things that I want to satisfy myself and to appease that child in me because I had to grow up quick. I had to raise myself. So given my situation and my circumstance, this is what I want. So I'm going to have what I want before I bring another child into this world. Because I want to be able to provide for my child. I don't want my child to have to go through some of the things I went through. So, you know, that's just not something I'm interested in at the moment. And so one of my nieces go, well, you know, you're going to be old having children. I said, sweetie, as long as I'm healthy, mind, body, and spirit, I'm not worried about the age. I'll be able to have children. I'm not worried about that. And it was just amazing the way my aunts were looking at me. I was like, marriage, I don't know. I was like, you know, I love men, they sexy and everything, but I just don't know if I want to wake up to a guy snoring in my face every morning. I was like, it's cool, we can date. I'll, you know, he can have his place, I can have mine. That way I can make sure he got his finances in order and he knows how to do things on his own. I don't like a male coming to me as though I'm supposed to be his mother. I want to know that you can wash your own clothes, you know how to cook, because I like people cooking for me. Now, one of my favorite pastimes is cooking, so I don't have a problem with that. But the point is, I would like a situation to be of equal value. I'm not going to just stick to the norm and get married and have children and push aside what my goals and my dreams are. I deserve to have my goals and my dreams in addition to a relationship and children, should I choose that. So it shouldn't be of which one am I going to pick. It should be which one is a priority to me. And for me, my priority is making sure that I accomplish my goals and my aspirations so that I am satisfied personally and I am whole by myself before I have a child or a mate to contend with. So I just wanted to share that because I think a lot of people – a lot of women go through the issue with their families, and then you look at a lot of the articles and a lot of the news things that are coming out of, you know, more black women not being married, this, that, and the third. They really don't take into context that there are a lot more black women saying they don't want to be married.
Right.
I found a lot of black women saying they don't want to be married. And then you have to look at our families. A lot of our families, we have a lot of divorces and things. So why would someone just want to rush out and get married when the examples that have been set forth by their parents is that marriages don't last? So we really need to look at what a marriage really is, what is it that I want to do, because we're all here for personal growth and evolution. And so I have to be able to satisfy those things that I require and that I desire before I go and just try to rush and get married and have children. I want to be whole. I'm happy just like this, and I wish a lot of women, whatever it is that you require or desire in your life, I just want to inspire you to go out and do it, and don't let these things that society is telling you what you should be. Don't think you have to be that. You can define yourself. That's an empowered woman. That's a powerful woman, a woman that can define what she wants out of life and decides to go get that. That is a virtuous woman. No matter what it is, you be the author of your destiny. Don't let someone else do that for you or try to make you feel bad because of what it is you want in your life. You're the only person that can live your life for you. Do not allow someone else to live their life vicariously through you. They had their chance. As a matter of fact, as long as they're breathing, they still have a chance. You make sure that you don't pass up yours.
I see.
Indeed.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Just amazing.
I handle that situation a little differently when I'm at family functions and everybody asks about marriage. When are you getting married? You know, you going to get married anytime soon? And I don't know. It may be rude. I'm not advising anybody to do this, but I'm just saying I usually just, you know, say, you know, right, because y'all are making it look like so much fun.
Because
you're so happy, right?
Wow. Now, I want to go through some of the comments in the chat room because there were some very important points that were brought up. One of the sisters made a comment about, let's see, it sounds like they are describing the goddess Nut when they say she comes out when the night comes, and when she calls forth her day, she is giving birth to Ra and birthing her nation and lighting up the world with her just being who she is. Ashe. Ashe. And another sister has, I had just taken notice of the numerical value of the scriptures you posted, and they add up to 9, which is a feminine sacred number of completion. And it seems very fitting to what the scriptures are describing, success, completion.
Ashe.
And, of course, another sister said that 9 equals Nut or niece or Nut. So it's just, I mean, see, this is what I mean. Right now we are in the spiritual circle because, you know, when I do these radio shows and when I do the classes and things, it just feels like I got all my sisters sitting around in this circle and we just vibing off of one another and sharing information. It's obvious that I have a chat room full of virtuous women sitting up in here because all of this information, all of this study and this information that we know and how to, you know, just read anything and be able to get who you really are out of it versus what you're being told. I mean, we just had a numerical breakdown, an archetypal discussion about Nut and what she represents and how she, that whole story of what the Proverbs woman was can be likened to the story of Nut. I mean, I just find that very, you know, very inspiring to me to be within the company of women who know themselves, who really know what they are, and know how to find themselves wherever we lie, because we're everywhere. Everything. We're everywhere. We are everything and we're everywhere. Let me see. The other thing that another sister said, rising before dawn to call on she who allows us to manifest can give us that happiness and comfort with ourselves so that we do not settle for the guy I met on the dating service who thinks a Proverbs woman is a slave to her man and kids.
Right.
I'll say to that one. All right. That is so true because when man steps to you like a pussy, his might be questionable no matter how well he launches his missile. Wow. His aim might be questionable no matter how well he launches his missile. That was a good way to say what you're saying. Wow. Anyway, if y'all have comments or questions, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-716-7675. Let me see. Do you think I should go ahead and get into Jeremiah, or do you think
yeah.
we should have the Genesis discussion on air?
Let's go with Jeremiah.
Okay. All right.
Keep it on the goddess path.
Okay, that was still technically the girl. But okay, let's go to Jeremiah. Let me see if I can find my passages in Jeremiah. I just want to introduce y'all to the Queen of Heaven right quick, let y'all know who she is, so I can give that to you. All right. We are going to go to Jeremiah 44, 15 through 19. All right, now, Jeremiah 44, 15 through 19, there's a story being told here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the story that's being told here, oh. The story that's being told here, Jeremiah 44, 15 through 19, is a story of two gods. Now, remember earlier I mentioned how the Bible had, at the least, two gods that had opposing ideologies, if you will. And this area in the Bible speaks about how the one God who seems to be a warring God that likes to conquer and take over and kind of sort of, if there's, this is the jealous God one on one hand. And then you have this God of love that provides and makes sure that the people are protected. So we're going to go ahead and get into this story in Jeremiah 44. Jeremiah 44:15 says, "Then all men which knew their wives had burned incense unto other gods,
no.
and all the women." Go ahead. Lynn, were you saying something?
No, that's not me.
All right. Okay, maybe I had another line open. Anyway. Then all the men which knew that their wives had burned incense unto other gods, and all the women that stood by, a great multitude, even all the people that dwelt in the land of Egypt in Patros, answered Jeremiah, saying, "As for the word that thou hast spoken unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee. But we will certainly do whatsoever thing goeth forth out of our own mouths, to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings, and our princes in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, for then we had plenty of victuals and were well and saw no evil. But since we left off to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted all things and have been consumed by the sword and by the famine. And when we burned incense to the Queen of Heaven and poured out drink offerings unto her, did we make her cakes to worship her and pour out drink offerings unto her? Without our men?" Okay, now I'm going to pause there. I'm going to start with the last verse that I just read, which was Jeremiah 44:19. That verse right there just said that the women were worshiping the Queen of Heaven even without their men. So that establishes that these are priestesses that of the goddess, one. That everybody, including the kings and the princes and the husbands and everything, poured libation, burnt incense, and worship the Queen of Heaven, and that while they were doing so, they had everything they needed. Now, if you want the whole story, you can read the whole Jeremiah 44, read the whole thing. But I'm going to briefly break down and give you a synopsis. The male god or male deity in this situation, which is the god that is jealous, came into Jerusalem, or what have you, and saw that the people were worshiping the Queen of Heaven, who is also known as Inanna or Ishtar or Asherah. She's a goddess. They also speak about her in this book called The Hebrew Goddess. There's numerous books, but two books, The Hebrew Goddess and Yahweh and the Gods and Gods of Canaan. So those are two reference materials that you can use to get more information on the Queen of Heaven and some of the other deities around that time frame. But so this jealous god comes in and sees that they are worshiping another god, which proves why he was jealous. He knew he was not the creatress and definitely not the only deity or god there was. He comes in, he sends his people in to go consume these people by famine and sword because they're trying to get them not to worship the Queen of Heaven. And the Queen of Heaven also was a symbol of the golden calf, which is also known as Hathor, or Heru. So these people, because they were pretty much, you know, said, we're going to kill you if you continue to worship your god, or, you know, burn your incense to the Queen of Heaven, you're going to kill you. So they stopped it, and they, you know, did what they were told, but then they realized their people were getting killed anyway. They were, you know, going through a famine. They couldn't eat. So they said, you know what, we're going to go back to worshiping our Queen of Heaven because then we had everything we needed. So screw what you said. We're going to go back to what we were doing because we were fine before you got here. Might I add that these are the people who came in from the north, which is also mentioned in any book you read about the Hyksos, also mentioned in When God Was a Woman, mentioned in the book about Ariel Gambutas. I mean, there are several books that speak about this particular period in time where they were in the process of wiping the goddess out. But as you can see, even in the process of trying to wipe her out, she is still there. She's still there. Did you have any comments on the passages I just read in my commentary?
I just going a little beyond the way that Jeremiah responds. It's just you know, just goes to show again these different type of these different gods that are in this Bible, because Jeremiah's response is, now mind you, these people came into their land, they were worshiping the goddess, and they said, no, don't worship the goddess, worship this god, this male god with no name. And then the people are saying, all right, we tried it your way, that's not working for us, we're going to go back to the Queen of Heaven. And Jeremiah's response is to curse the people. Like, if you read on to the end, he cursed the people. And then it's the whole 45 is about, the whole next chapter, chapter 45, is his curse to curse the land, to turn them over to the enemy.
Right.
All
right.
Because want to stick with the goddess they were worshiping before he even got there.
Right, right. But see, that's the thing, and that's why it's important for us to really read the passages in the Bible and take out of the emotional attachment to what we were taught. Just read it and follow along the storyline and see if it makes sense to you. See what it's saying to you, and do the research. Pull up the definitions. Find out what these things mean. Use some resources other than the Bible, because the Bible is just a book. It is not a book of historical fact. It is a mythological book, and it's also a book that if you do not have the keys, you cannot understand it and interpret it properly. The Bible is a metaphysical book of symbols. So if you don't know what these symbols mean, if you don't have a clear understanding of what these things mean, you will walk away thinking that the woman is dirty because she had a period and the whole fall of everything was messed up because the woman is evil and the serpent told her to eat an apple. And then that's all you need to know, because the preacher going to tell you the rest.
Indeed, and if you're not paying attention, these changes, you don't notice them, because that's not spoken on when you're going to church and or your Bible study and studying these. But unless you are talking about a god with, you know, some type of schizophrenia or bipolar situation, the way that these gods are described, these are different entities. This same God that is jealous and will curse your nation if you don't, you know, worship him and only him, this God that says there will be no other gods before me and doesn't want you to have any knowledge from the tree of good and evil, that same God is not the same God that's talked about in the New Testament.
Exactly. It's not the God that's spoken about in the New Testament. It's not the God that said, I was there at the beginning of creation in Proverbs. We are not talking about the same God. It is not the same God throughout the entire Bible. And this is just one book, which is, by the way, a book of other books that were put together, because The Bible as we see it is not how it was in the beginning or when they started to put these biblios or biblos together. This is a book of stories told by people who were said to be of inspired by God and observed certain things. These are said to be inspired texts, but you also have other books that are said to be inspired. You have the Gnostic version, the Gnostic texts, which are also referred to as the Nag Hammadi Library. You have the Apocrypha, which it stands for hidden books that were not included in the canon. The canon. By the way, the canon was set up by the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church doesn't even go by this Bible. They go by, you know, some of the information in the Apocrypha, and then they also go by their dogmas, which they can change if the weather doesn't look good today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
God is definitely schizo. Maybe God needs some medication. I can prescribe some herbs that might help to balance out his mental faculties, but if he's God, he has access to them. So, you know.
No, it's just disappointing that the average person who has guided their whole lives by this book does not take the time to look into these books and look into these stories and just study and to see this information. The average person just takes it at face value or takes what the pastor said and runs with it.
And it's also upsetting to me that the first time you actually, as a, you know, a person who is being introduced to Christianity or any other religion, when you start to have questions, the main thing they teach you is to not question God. Well, if you're talking to the pastor, technically you're not questioning God. You're questioning the pastor's capacity to explain what he just read or what you read in the Bible. And furthermore, this same God that doesn't want to be questioned also don't want you to have knowledge. So, I mean, what? I just don't get it. The other question that I had, and I'm trying not to make this a rant at this point, but it's so much inconsistencies in the Bible that it's ridiculous for a person not to naturally question it and naturally want an explanation for some of the information they are being told and some of the ways they're being told to live. Like Leviticus is a book that tells you what you can't eat, what you can't eat, what you can't do, what's clean, what's not clean, what you can wear, you unclean till the evening pass. What time does evening start? I mean, if we don't take the time out to read these texts and get into this information ourselves, we're living our lives based on rules and guidelines that we really just have been told about, but we haven't even really looked into them ourselves. And it's really up to each and every one of us to understand, to have our understanding of our, the way we choose to live our life. And we're the ones that are in control of our personal evolution. And that's really what we're all here for. If you were to get rid of the different religious systems and just try to understand life itself and get down to the basic meaning of what life is and what love is and get away from the different religious systems, then, you know, you may have a better understanding of things. But I find that instead of throwing away, for me, instead of throwing away the Bible and throwing away all of these different religious systems, it's helped me understand a lot by looking at the different religious systems and the different mythologies and seeing how this same story flows out throughout the globe. It's certain things that are the same no matter which mythology you look to, but they each help you to get clear understanding on life itself. Yeah, some of the names change, some of the storylines change, excuse me, just a tad bit, but for the most part, they're really teaching the same basic principles. And then they're all talking about other people that come in and try to kill off or change what was there before they got there. And if we don't know these things, we just assume that, you know, we know the right thing to do and my religion is the first one and, you know.
No, I don't think the Bible should be thrown out at all. There is some important information in the Bible. The text that we you know, just going over today, perfect example. But I think it does take critical thinking. You cannot take it at face value. And if the average person, if you ask them, what is God to you? What do you think God is? What is your image or idea of God? The description that they give you, if they were to write that down so that it's on paper and in front of their faces and then have them to read the Bible that they live their lives by every day, they will find that that God that's in this Bible and their idea of God is not the same to begin with.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, I don't think it's anybody's idea to dream of or to serve a God that if you don't do what he wants you to do, you're cursed. You know, I don't think anybody would dream up a God that if you don't live.
Well, that brings up two things for me, though. And this was a lot of my problem when I was younger, and which is why I didn't really hold on to any particular type of religion from when I was young. If it don't make sense to me, I just can't just follow it just because. And I even tried being a Christian again when I was grown, and it lasted for about four years. And then I was like, man, the hell with this? I can't. And it's not even just Christianity. You know, I'm not going to harp against just one particular religious system. It's just that if you teach one thing, you ought to be able to not be a hypocrite about what you're teaching. Most Christians don't practice what they preach.
No, they don't.
And they're fanatical with it and always trying to tell somebody else how they wrong and where they wrong, and then they quote you one particular scripture and you better not question it. It's just,
It's impossible. You can't live your life and live by the, you cannot live by the letter of the law that is set out in this book. It's impossible. It's made to keep you feeling inferior. Because
you
cannot live your life like this, and then when you fail, then you're told that you are nothing and you need forgiveness and you need healing. You need to come in the blood of Jesus, because that's the only way, because by yourself you are not going to make it.
These were the questions I had. If indeed this God that is this jealous God and don't want nobody else to worship any other idols, it shouldn't have really been any other idols if he was the only God. So that confused me, first of all. The second thing is, why would you go and create this being that you knew, since you're all-knowing, you're omnipotent, omnipresent, all these other things, you know everything, and you know what each creation that you create is going to be before you create them? Explain the situation with the devil to me. You mean to tell me that you didn't know that this being was going to do what it did? You God, right?
And not only that, but how is a omnipotent God that has created all things jealous? To begin with,
why would you be jealous of something you created? And then you have to question the two creation stories, and I think I'm going to have to dedicate a whole another show for Genesis, so I'm not going to get into it. But
yes.
Why are there different creation stories in the same text, right
back
next to each other?
One in chapter 1 and another in chapter 2, back to back.
And then in chapter 5, it elaborates on chapter 1.
And I mean,
so
and they're not.
You know,
they're
it's just interesting to look at all of this information and really, you know, also understand the words of Jesus, if you will. You know, the kingdom of heaven is not in churches made of wood and stone. Is that not what he said? The kingdom of God is inside of you? That essentially means that, as he said in John, you are all God. It's you. It's not something else out there in the sky. It's you. In Genesis, it said that beings were made in the image of God. But then it also said something else. We'll do another show to get into the specifics on Genesis and the creation stories that's in the Bible, because I think that deserves its own study time, honestly, because I really think Yeah, that deserves its own time frame. But it'd be interesting to hear what everybody thinks about the story in Jeremiah and the Queen of Heaven. And a lot of people would have sworn up and down that right there wouldn't have been so verbatim and outright in the Bible, but it's there.
It's as if the Old Testament describes a father God and the New Testament is all about mother God.
That's right. You know, I'm just flipping through Proverbs, because all through Proverbs they talk about this woman called wisdom, you know. And Proverbs, say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman. And then it goes on to, I mean, there's various places in Proverbs. Wisdom hath builded her house, she hath hewn out her seven pillars. Doth wisdom not cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of high places, by way in the places of the path. She cries at the gate. I mean, clearly wisdom is a woman. And I've got to find this passage where wisdom says she was there in the beginning.
I like that passage about wisdom. It describes wisdom. And, yeah, it always did boggle me that they described wisdom as a woman. But in their description of wisdom as this woman, it lets you know that wisdom is does not sit around and wait for you to notice her either. She's going to call out to you a couple of times, and if you ignore her, she's going to keep it moving.
There you go.
In other words, if you don't get...
Wow. I'm looking in here, and I want to know what you come up with when I read this. And y'all in the chat room, or if you on the line, press 1. I want to hear what y'all get from this. This is Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
You know, I feel that on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm. I feel that on multiple levels because if you have a fear of something, that is the beginning of wisdom, because the first thing you need to do is look into what it is and why you're afraid of it.
And usually there will be some type of understanding or healing that is behind that fear.
Anyway, well, I think we have thoroughly, you know, explained the Proverbs woman, the virtuous woman, and gotten into the Queen of Heaven, and also spoken a bit about, obviously, an upcoming show we'll have to do on Genesis and the creation stories in the Bible. So, got a couple of announcements and a couple of things to touch on before we head out tonight. August 7th, we are going to schedule a telethon or radio-a-thon or what have you to support the Nubian Archaeological Project headed up by Nubia Warford. You can find her on Facebook as Sista Nubia, and it's spelled S-I-S-T-A-H, and, of course, Nubia, N-U-B-I-A. We will be selling the In Search of the Creatures DVD, which explores the spread of the creatures to several continents and the possibility of how it spread from Africa to Asia and Europe. The iconography associated that implies a central root of belief layered and by change in location, ethnic interpretation, and time. Again, she can be, you can email her if you want to purchase the DVD prior to our telethon to You can email her at NubianBigs@hotmail.com, and that's NubianBigz at hotmail.com. And her website is AncientNubianCities.com. Like I said, if you want to purchase a DVD before August 7th, you can just email her and purchase your copy. And she will be going back to Sudan, going back to Nubia in September, I believe, and to further, you know, along with her dig. And I hope to be able to go over soon so I can participate in some primary research myself. So we do need to support this sister. What she is doing is absolutely phenomenal and outstanding. You know, being a black woman over there doing what she is doing, you know, in that particular area, she is the first. We absolutely need to support her in every way possible. So, again, friend her on Facebook and plan for August 7th to, you know, be available to participate with the telethon so we can raise some money to support her Nubian archaeological project. So just wanted to throw that out there. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and head out for today. I hope everyone enjoyed their weekend, and see you on Sunday after next. Peace and blessings.
You are listening to Black Wookaverse Radio. Mark us as your favorite on Blog Talk Radio and leave comments to let us know how we're doing. You can also find us on YouTube and Facebook. On YouTube, our page is youtube.com/BlackWomaniverse. Subscribe to us there. On Facebook, our page is facebook.com/BlackWomaniverse. Send us a friend request. Black Womaniverse, empowering, informing, and uplifting black women. If you are interested in joining the temple, come see us at www.blackwomaniverse.com. See you there. Sodonic Chemistry is a supplier of natural and complementary ingredients used in skincare, hair care, aromatherapy, massage, spa products, herbal preparations, and soap making. We also offer a selection of spiritual supplies, clothing, accessories, natural body scrubs, and herbal mixtures for your beauty and wellness needs. We strive for superior quality products and exceptional customer service. Our natural products and other ingredients are sourced from the most reputable origins and produced in the greenest manner possible. Our products and botanical ingredients are offered in a wide variety of sizes and quantities to allow you to purchase as much or as little as you need. Feel free to browse our diverse selection or contact us to schedule a salon or spa appointment in our newly renovated Beauty and Wellness Center located in Richmond, Virginia. Visit us at DivineChemistry.com or call us at 804-627-0277.